Tax Committee to order. Senator Dill, you're first on the agenda, Senate File 811. Senator Dill.
Mr. Chairman, members, Senate File 811 is a bill that facilitates the consolidation of the McLeod West School District. And there's it provides for the McLeod West School District is going to be absorbed into three other districts based on an election that's going to be held on May 5th. And in order to facilitate this, the operating levy debt in that school district has to be serviced by the taxpayers of that district. And there's a bond that they need to be able to sell to pay off that debt. And the bond will be paid off over 5 years or 6 years by the taxpayers of that Senate district or school district. And I've got all four superintendents with me. They're all supportive of this, the three receiving school districts plus the McLeod West superintendent. And as we had this conversation earlier, we also have some interested citizens here who are here to try to express their view on how the tax burden should be spread across the school district to service this debt on this bond that will be sold. So there's an amendment up there to transfer this school debt to the house, garage, and 1 acre as it relates to farmland. But I think before we get to that amendment, we should probably have, so we've got Superintendent Tony Boyer here from the McLeod West School District, and I'd like to have him provide some background for the committee.
Superintendent Boyer, welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Tony Boyer. I'm the superintendent at McLeod West. I came to that district in February of last year to try to help them through some difficult financial times, and I guess I didn't do a very good job because it went from bad to worse, and so we're sitting here today. I don't think anybody could have done anything to what was going on there and what finally did happen. And to cut a long story short, last fall, we were in about $700,000 of operating debt, SOD, and we had to make a decision to either pass an operating levy at the maximum rate or we were going to have to close the district down, which if we closed it down, we'd either go to consolidation or dissolution. Went out to the voters with a $1,500 operating levy. And at that time, we gave out the literature as per the statute, which said that if we didn't pass the levy, that we would go into SOD and we would have to either consolidate or dissolve. Prior to that, I had asked the four districts that border McLeod West to come in and we would explain our situation, and if we did lose the vote, we were going to ask them to come back and see if they wanted to partner with us in a consolidation effort. Three of the four decided that it was in their best interest to do that for a number of reasons. First of all, our greatest concern was the students of the McLeod West District and all districts, because if you dissolve, you don't know where they're going to go, and sometime no money will follow them that way. And the other issue was they wouldn't be very well accepted in districts where they weren't wanted. And so we have given Fairfax Winthrop to our south, Buffalo Hector to our west, and Glencoe Silver Lake to our east, bordering on the district. And we have been working since the 12th of November, 1 week after our operating levy was defeated, and we've been working with Alan Hopeman of Northland Securities to come up with a plan for consolidation. And we've followed the statute as designed, and in order to finance this debt and keep it as transparent as possible and keep it in the McLeod West District only, We came up with the idea that the general obligation bond was the only way that we could do that, because then all of the cost, including the financing of this debt, would be McLeod West only. And that's where we are here today, and that's what we're asking for, is the authority to sell general obligation bonds so we can dissolve this debt over the course of the next 5-6 years.
Superintendent Boyer, how much is the debt?
We're projecting the debt is, right now they're showing about $3 million, but I think it's going to be closer to 2.5, 2.6 when everything is done. But we haven't come up with that figure yet. We went through severance packages as per the statute again, and that was one of the obligations of the three cooperating districts. They had to take on our seniority lists, and they felt with that that we needed to offer some severance packages to pare that list down as much as we possibly could. So as per the statute, we set out severance packages, and about two-thirds of our staff did take those. So so that increased our debt quite substantially.
And Mr. Boyer, members, there's also a building issue. I think I've heard the center part of your building has been condemned, so there really isn't much option for the school district short of the route that they've taken. It appears to be the best route for the students in the school district. Now, there is a vote coming up with regard to consolidation that is impacting this. You want the debt resolved where this debt is going to go prior to this vote. Could you tell us when that vote is and a little bit about that?
Mr. Chair, the vote, the consolidation vote, is coming up May 5th. All four of the school districts, McLeod West, GFW, BLH, and GSL, have all passed the resolution for the consolidation vote, and they did that unanimously with their board, so everybody's on board with this. It will be May 5th. We believe that in order for this to be a positive vote, this GO bond needs to be in place prior to that, so there is complete transparency, and the cooperating districts fully understand that they will be accepting no debt from the McLeod West District.
And so, members, the question then is the A2 amendment that we have, is that been passed out?
No.
We need, Senator Dill, would you like to pass the A2 amendment out?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I would.
And you want to just explain it, Senator Dill?
Yeah, go ahead.
Members, the A2 amendment is an amendment that would have the land that's to be assessed this bond be the same parcels that would be for the voter-approved operating referendum, as opposed to all the parcels is what would be in the bill that's drafted. Is there Senator Scheid, would you move the A2 amendment?
Oh, Mr. Chairman, yes. I move the A2.
Questions, members? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevailed. Amendments adopted. Questions on the bill? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious, what would the average market value, the average value home, be paying if this were to pass?
I will.
On an annual basis.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I will ask our financial consultant, Mr. Holtman, to address that.
Mr. Holtman, welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Alan Holtman. I work for Northland Securities, and I have been working as a consultant with the McLeod West District on this consolidation process. Senator Dibble, your question, I need to clarify it a little bit. If the bill to authorize the GO bond passes, there will be it doesn't change the tax impact very much. The under current law, the McLeod West debt, the $2.5 million or $3 million, whatever it winds up being, will be apportioned out to the other districts in proportion to the amount of tax capacity that they pick up. And then those districts will be able to collect a levy that will be applied to the McLeod West taxpayers. So the bill doesn't change that. The bill before the amendment was put on this morning, all that did was allow the bonds to be issued so that the issuance costs would be borne by the McLeod West taxpayers enrolled into the bond. So there was a little bit of issuance and interest costs on that bond. A little bit of an increase in years 4 and 5 because of that. But the principal amount is going to be the same under either bill. The amendment that you just adopted does change the tax impact, and I can tell you what we estimated would be paid in the first year, say a $150,000 home. $247 would be paid if the bill doesn't pass at all. $247 would be paid by that home in the event that the bill passed without the amendment. With the amendment on there, that changes the impact on that $150,000 home to $454, and it has the opposite effect on farmland, and I can give you those figures if you'd like to have those. And I should add, too, that these are estimates. We, you know, the bonds haven't been sold yet. We don't know what the interest rate will be when they're sold, and we don't know what the final debt amount is, but these were assuming current interest rates and actually, we assumed a little bit of an increase over current rates, and about $3 million is the debt amount.
That would have saved. Any other questions, members? Senator Dill, I think this bill, you're going to ask that it be referred to the floor?
Mr. Chairman, members, that's correct. There's an urgency to get this bill passed so that the school districts know what is going to happen and they can start educating the public for this May 5th referendum.
Or did it come from education?
Senator Dill, has this bill been through the Education Committee?
It's been through Senator Stump's committee.
Yes, Senator Stump's committee?
Yes.
Yes.
And the full finance.
And full finance.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that, and what's the number? It's Senate File 811. As amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the floor.
Senator Scheid moves Senate File 811 be recommended to pass it as amended and referred to the Senate floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All same sign. Motion prevails. Bill's passed. Thank you, Senator Dill.
Good luck,
superintendents, with your consolidation vote.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, committee.
I see Senator Laurie is here.
Wow. This is about a friend.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I have Senate File 1283.
Senator Laurie.
This bill adds Economic Development Region 7E to the list of regions allowed to create a tourism tax increment financing, or TIF district. And really, our understanding of the purpose of the original creation of this was to take economically challenged regions with great tourism potential and allow them to do this to help them to build that tourism as true economic development. And Region 7E meets a lot of the same criteria that the other regions, 2, 3, 4, and 5, have. And we'd very much like the consideration of the committee to add us to the list of those able to use this provision to attract a tourism facility to our region to support that economic development. With me here to further explain the provision is Don Howard, the city administrator from Pine City.
Mr. Howard, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Chairman.
I've been in Minnesota about a year and a half as the administrator of the city of Pine City, and even before
Mr.
I came.
Mr. Howard, could you say your name for the record so we can identify
you? Don Howard.
Thank you.
And as I was saying, the city of Pine City had been trying for a number of years to try to locate a hotel lodging facility in the community. I got involved shortly after arriving in Pine City. We got close a couple times to trying to put the financial package together, and we just didn't have enough tools at our disposal. We're limited on revolving loan funds. We're facing some significant tax and water and sewer situations. And, you know, I began looking at the statutes, and I saw this, and I thought, well, I don't really understand why our region's not involved in this. You know, three of the five counties in Region 70 clearly qualify under the median income cap, and I think we're also a region that tourism, outdoor recreational opportunities really provide a real economic development opportunity, and we're just not able to take advantage of that because we don't have access to this tool. Pine City itself only has 23 rooms in the city of about 3,200 people. We're surrounded by, or we surround 3,000 acres of waterways. We've got recreational visitors all year round through from the wintertime in hockey. We host some hockey tournaments. We can't offer any more because we don't have the facilities to accommodate people to stay for tournaments. In the summertime, we've got softball opportunities, and again, we're limited because of lack of accommodations. And I really believe this would give us an opportunity to really progress our economic development by landing some facilities that could accommodate tourism and visitors.
Mr. Chair and members, also, you know, Pine City is well situated to attract folks. It's just shy of an hour north of the Twin Cities. I mean, it's a really attractive option for people looking to get to their recreation spots quickly. So we hope that you'll look favorably upon this provision. Okay. Happy to take any questions.
Yep. Thank you, Senator Lurie. Questions, members? Senator Watt.
Mr. Chair, I don't have a question, but I appreciate Senator Lurie trying to do this, and when the time is appropriate, I'd like to move the bill.
Any other questions, members? Senator Ma, I think we're just going to lay these over as we are with all the tax increment bills for possible inclusion. So, Senator Lurie, I think we'll lay over Senate File 1283 for possible inclusion in the Senate tax bill.
And that works very well. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Pappas, did I see you here?
There she is.
Welcome to the committee, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, Senate File 929 will extend the time that St. Paul can use our half-cent sales tax revenue, which is called the STAR program, to pay the principal of capital investment bonds for capital projects for the city. We had a five-year waiver, and we want to extend that another 5 years. And then Section 2 clarifies that in the STAR program, all the loan repayments and any return funds for projects that didn't happen and any interest must be available only for Neighborhood STAR. And then Section 3 requires just some clarification about the process that the proposals have to be reviewed by the STAR board before presentation to the City Council. We had some circumstances where some projects went to the City Council first and then were sent to the STAR board, and it needs to be the reverse process so that they do their review and all the projects will go to the review panel before coming to the City Council.
So the project's flow would be changed so it goes through the STAR board first and then to the City
Mr.
Council?
Mr. Chairman, the typical flow is that all applicants send their applications to the STAR board. They review them, then they make their recommendation to the City Council. But there was another process that the City Council developed where projects could go directly to the City Council member for his or her approval, and then the STAR board would review them. and if the Star Board rejected them, the City Council would grant a waiver. So it didn't feel like it was an open, fair, and competitive process. Everyone didn't kind of know the rules of the game. So I wanted to clarify that it needs to go to the Star Board first through an open, fair, and competitive process. The City Council is the elected body. They can always add on projects or subtract projects, just like we might do with the LCMR. But at least everyone would have their fair shot at being reviewed by the Star Board.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, I have Ms. Margaret Kelly here, who's the Finance Director. She'll just make a few comments on Section 1.
Okay. Ms. Kelly.
Thank you. Margaret Kelly with the City of St. Paul. This bill addresses our STAR revenues, which come from our half-cent local sales tax. 40% of those revenues are dedicated to debt service on our River Center complex. 10% are dedicated to cultural activities citywide. And 50% are dedicated to capital improvement projects in neighborhoods. And it's loans and grants, and it's a one-to-one match, dollar for dollar. Our current law authorizes that up to $3.5 million of the neighborhood pot of money can be used for debt service on city projects. And we are asking to extend that authority to use those resources in that way for another 5 years.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just curious, when you say one-to-one match, where do the match dollars come from, the other dollars?
Mr. Chair and
Ms.
Senator
Kelly.
Dibble, the match dollars come from the local nonprofits, either through fundraising or through their own resources.
Mr. Chairman, we don't typically do grants to businesses. They tend to be loans, but it also could be those resources.
Interesting.
Good idea, Mr. Chair.
Senator Wong. So we should lay Senate File 1122 over for inclusion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And I agree, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Pappas.
Thank
and Ms.
you.
Kelly. Chair will lay Senate File 929 over for possible inclusion in the Senate tax bill.
Thank you.
And Senator Mwong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. I am presented to you today Senate File 1122. The bill authorizes in Section 1 of the bill, so I will briefly explain the bill, and then I have Mr. Tony Schertler and Ms. Nancy Holmans here. Ms. Holmans will speak on the request on behalf of the City of St. Paul. Mr. Schertler is a consultant who is working with us on this project, and he will be able to answer any technical questions that you may have. Section 1 of the bill authorizes the Housing Redevelopment Authority, with the approval of the City of St. Paul, to establish a new redevelopment project area in which tax increments from various tax increment districts, four to be specific, may be expended. It also authorizes that at least 80% of the property within the project area must be located within a quarter mile of the Central Corridor Light Rail Transit Alignment. Subdivision 1 of Section 2 extends the duration of the four existing tax increment financing districts previously established by the St. Paul HRA to December 31st, 2029. Subdivision 2 of the bill provides that the tax increments from the four extended tax increment districts be spent within their original project areas or the new project area established pursuant to Section 1. We also authorize the expenditures to be used for any public redevelopment cost, including cost of public areas and the cost of programs to mitigate lost parking caused by the construction of the Central Corridor Light Rail Transit Line. Now, the request does ask for the allowance or the relaxing of some provisions that are in current law. So in order to spend the tax increments outside the existing tax increment districts on these costs, this special law provides relief from the following general tax increment law provisions. One, We will be relieved of the requirement that tax increments from soils condition district, of which one of these existing four districts is currently a soils condition district, be used only for removal or remediation of hazardous substances or acquiring parcels on which such activities would be undertaken. The second relief is the requirement that 90% of tax increments from redevelopment districts be used to correct the conditions that allowed creation of the redevelopment district. Third, we will be asking for some relief from the prohibition on the use of tax increments for public parks or facilities used for social, recreational, or conference purposes. And four, the limitations on the use of tax increments to finance improvements that primarily serve a decorative purpose or aesthetic purpose or a functional purpose, but their cost is increased 100% because of the design of materials. And finally, I guess there's another additional one I couldn't count. The five-year after certification limit on new expenditures and the requirement that 75% of the tax increments be spent within the tax increment district from which they were generated. Section 3 of the bill provides that the special law is effective upon approval of the City Council and filing of the resolution approving the special law with the Secretary of State. The approval of the county and school district, which is generally required to extend tax increment districts by special law, is not required, although we are in conversation with the school district and the county, and Ms. Holmans can give you an update on where we are at in those conversations. I will now turn the microphone over to Ms. Holmans to give some testimony, and then we'll take some questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Moore, what's the date that the current districts are going to expire?
Mr. Chair, they vary. The four districts, let's see. The one district, the Spruce Tree District, expires in 2014. A scattered site district will expire in 2016. The Snelling U District expires in 2016, and the Soils District, the Hubbard Soils District, will expire in 2021.
And I'm sorry if you've already covered this, but and the reason to go way out to 2029 is that is a long time.
Mr. Chair, members, I believe that that's part of the modeling, and if I could have Mr. Schertler maybe speak to that.
Chairman, committee members, my name is Tony Schertler with Springstead Financial Advisors. The City of St. Paul approached us a couple of months ago about preparing a financing plan and alternatives for this Central Corridor project, which includes in excess of $100 million of improvement costs. What we did was analyze various ways to do that, including possible abatements or assessments or tax increment or a variety of tools that are available to the city to do that. This tool, we suggested these tax increment districts are within the corridor plan area from downtown Minneapolis to downtown St. Paul. And what we did was examine the possibility of using those increments for this project. The extension of the years 15 still doesn't cover the entire project cost, but it was intended to match, I think, a similar request that was in front of the legislature last year. So it's a number to try and generate enough revenues to cover project costs. It ultimately only throws off a portion of the cost, so it doesn't close the gap entirely. It could be more, it could be less, but it's really it's a math issue about trying to size this revenue stream to handle the project cost that the city has.
And how much increment are we talking about between now and, or how much new increment beyond the life of the current districts?
Chairman, committee members, currently there are some limitations on the increment use and location that it's used, but if they did not extend the districts, if they simply used what was currently available to them to the point of their termination, they would have available to them approximately $7 million of incremental bonds to apply to the project. If the extension occurs to 15 years on the districts, they'll have approximately $37 million in bond proceeds available to the project. Obviously, only a fraction of what they need to accomplish their goal, but it's a significant tool to do that.
And why, I mean, why wouldn't all of this development happen along with the development of the corridor?
Mr. Chairman, I think that I would defer to the city on the uses and the logic on that. We are primarily financing plan, so I think I would defer to Nancy on what those uses, where those uses came from.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Nancy Homans. I serve on the staff of St. Paul Mayor Chris Coleman. The effort here is to take the to leverage the huge investment in public transit as an economic development and community development platform for the entire community. The project itself is only able to pay for a very bare bones transit system, which is entirely appropriate. But we all understand that streetscape improvements and some of those other additional improvements are what serve as the levers for the kind of economic and community development that we all hope are generated through this transit line, converting from a transit system to a transit and economic development system. It is our sense that those improvements are best made at the time the line is being constructed. So the installation of lighting, the installation of trees, structural soil, irrigation, those of which are going to take up most of the bond proceeds that would be generated through this district, should be done during the 5 years that we're under construction. And we don't in the city have the resources to do that on our own. And the project doesn't have the resources to devote to those improvements. So we are asking for the assistance of the legislature to help us help ourselves to make those investments in a timely way. So when the project opens, the line opens in 2014, it does all that we hope it does, and we don't say, oh, darn, we've just spent $1 billion, and now we have to start making additional improvements to leverage that investment to be a true economic development engine.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In light of that comment, have you considered creating a special tax, seeking a special tax authority, add a tenth of a cent on to purchases made in the city of St. Paul? After all, your city is going to be benefiting from any economic development that this line is coming through your city. The state is willing to pay some of it, or at least that's the mood of legislators, I think. If that's true, the state will be paying for the major infrastructure and then some of the softer elements of this plan. You might be able to take care of yourself by just seeking a special tax authority, add on to a sales tax a little mm-hmm. bit of, due to the purchases made. Mm-hmm. As economic development continues with this line going through your city, you can generate that fund by the increase in economic development that comes into your city. Rather than going to all the state taxpayers to pay for your sidewalks and your streetscapes, you could generate this on your own. Have you had that discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to defer, or Mr. Chairman, member, I'm going to ask Tony Shurtler.
Chair Bach, Senator, in fact, when the city approached us about the project, there was a concept to do perhaps a value-added district or a variety of potential revenue sources that some may require statutory allowance. Some may be using existing tools that they had. In this project, our job as financial advisors for the city is to find a revenue stream that has some confidence out there that they can issue debt for. So that's one. Two is there's a sense of urgency to this project. It's being approved, and they are preparing to start turning dirt on this thing next year. So there is a time urgency in terms of identifying potential revenue sources to apply to this project. We did start the conversation about, and I know there's other entities out there talking about some value capture concepts or something to put around transportation corridors to apply to the problem. And there's some concepts about talking to other states. But the fact is that I work in several other states. Some of them have payroll taxes. Some of them have sales taxes. And we thought it wise, given the time, to use tools that are that you as policymakers have experience and understanding. In this case, the city has also sought to approval of the other local entities that would contribute, the county and the school district. And so you could do this as an abatement. You could do an abatement project on these TIF districts afterwards. The problem with abatement is you have to spend the money on a benefiting property. And what they're doing here, if you did it on these districts, for example, is limiting it to those areas. An abatement would not be able to be spent, or there'd be some legal interpretation about whether that abatement could be spent along the whole corridor. So we are beginning to examine that as a possibility, but there are going to be limits to that tool. A sales tax tool, again, there is a statutory process that we would have to go through to do it, and I'm sure there may not be resistance to that, or that's a possibility, but we were given sort of a time urgency of this, and we thought, why don't we take something that they're already familiar with, what all the local governments are familiar with? These are already TIF districts that the county and the school district aren't grabbing the capacity for. So let's start there with something that everybody is familiar with and show those numbers. We prepared a report that shows the diversion of taxes from those entities and the tax capacity effect of that. And if that's unacceptable, then we'll go back to the drawing board, but then we've lost 3 months of time with the federal money.
Mr. Schertler, I was just looking yesterday at the trend line of what's been happening to property taxes. And I discovered that from 2003 to 2009, property taxes in Minnesota have gone up about $2.7 billion, over 53%. And I really thought that the whole idea of these whole transit lines was it was going to bring all this new capacity, all this new development at all these stations, and now if we're going to just capture all of that, we're just going to continue this trend line of property taxes? I mean, are we going to be at 60% next year and 65% in 11 and 70% increase from 03 and 12? I mean, at what point do we actually capture new capacity and buy down other people's property taxes? I mean, I'm a bit frustrated by capturing all the new capacity and shifting that burden onto all the existing property owners. I mean, what's the point of growth if it doesn't expand our tax capacity? Senator Watt?
Mr. Chair, I hear your frustration, and I share that frustration. I mean, I live in St. Paul, and I'm very well aware of the property tax burden on St. Paul citizens. And members of this committee knows I'm not that big of a fan of TIF, and I my city knows that this this is sort of an option of last resort to try to incentivize the redevelopment. We are not getting enough funds to do the Central Corridor line. We want to take advantage of this opportunity. But, Mr. Chair, members, I have been chief authoring the Central Corridor project for as long as I've been at the legislature. It's going on 8 years. And maybe Senator Langseth could tell us how much this line has quadrupled in cost from when we initially put it in, and how many times we've not been able to get it passed or make it become a priority. And it gets increasingly more expensive every year when we're not able to get it done. And I think all the developments that go along with that and all the opportunities that comes along with that has also increased in cost. And we feel like we just can't miss this opportunity. And if I need to plug my nose and help my city take advantage of this opportunity, we'll do it, but very reluctantly, and I absolutely hear your frustration because I share that too.
Well, Senator Ma, what to Senator Limmer's point, what does the 0.5% local option sales tax in St. Paul raise? And wouldn't it make more sense, rather than shift all this burden to St. Paul property tax owners, to shift some of it to people like me that make purchases in the city of St. Paul and I live here 6 months a year? What does a 0.5% raise? And is the current use the best use?
Well, Mr. Chair, we could give you the specific number, but you may recall that the last time I tried a half a cent local option sales tax. I was not very popular.
I remember the, I remember the 3% liquor one that was very popular.
Well, in the general category, the same general category, Mr. Chair. So you were there with me.
Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair, it reminds me of that discussion we had on the Senate floor a year or two back about taxing beer. And
I think that was the one.
And we thought, have we no mercy? And yet at the same time, I guess I look at it, I represent a significant portion of Hennepin County, and the legislature, in their wisdom, suggested that only Hennepin County taxpayers pay for an asset that this government recognized, the Twin Stadium, and only the Hennepin County taxpayers would pay for it through a percentage added on to their sales tax. Now we have a similar situation where the beneficiaries of a statewide funded program like light rail, all of the taxpayers are going to contribute to that program, and the city of St. Cloud wants the rest of the taxpayers to beautify their streets by streetscapes and other things that would add to that program. Now, I didn't suggest abatements. I didn't suggest TIF. I just suggested, and using the example that we've used before by this governing authority, this would be, this just, it just seems to make sense. The local improvements to the city would be handled by the city. If they don't have the resources now, let's find a way to find resources for them, but have it localized. So they're the direct beneficiaries of the very investment that they make. And when one considers, should we tax the rest of the taxpayers for that or create a local option for the city, I think there'd be tremendous support from the legislature where you don't have to go back to the taxpayers up in Cook to pay for the sidewalks in St. Paul. I just think it's a good way to do it. The taxpayers and the investors in real estate, jobs, economic development are all going to benefit by our investment of just running a light rail through their city. And the least they could do is take care of their own streetscapes by a local option. Well, I just think it's a balance and a shared investment.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think, Senator Limmer, that's what we're trying to do here, is to say we've looked at all the potential local options that's available to us, all the different tools, and the creating the Central Corridor Light Rail Transit Project Area using our own property taxes through creating a TIF district is the best way to do that. And it will impact county property taxes, and it will impact our school district. But this is as local as we can get. In fact, I think Mr. Chair was suggesting that the opposite argument would be true. If we were to impose a sales tax in St. Paul, you all come to St. Paul, and you would all be contributing to that. So I would think that it's the reverse. What we're trying to do here is, as a matter of time constraint, I would love to broaden whatever the base is, because it certainly would alleviate the burden on my constituents. But we thought that this tool was probably the one that was, it's the clearest, most efficient to administer, and the most understandable as a tool that's already in existence. And the one where it does say that if we can get the consent of the school district and our county board, it will be, it's a local burden that we're going to impose on our local property taxes, not on people who are coming into the city. And this is where, you know, I think that we're in agreement that we're going to go this route. So,
Senator Mois, the current half a percent, has anybody examined whether, you know, when those things come into play and they're passed, does anybody ever evaluate 5 years, 10 years later if those uses are still the best use? Mm-hmm. I mean, because we've changed or added some uses over time. Well, has St. Paul gone through that process? I mean, is that half a percent still the uses of that, still the best use of that money, or might this be a good use for part of it?
Well, I mean, I suppose we could. Do you want to take a stab at that? I think that we've done the analysis and.
I wasn't here.
Mr. Chair, the half-cent sales tax and the STAR program, and we expect that we will be tapping portions of the neighborhood STAR portion of that to do some of the development in the Central Corridor as well. But we believe that those programs that we've been using the sales tax money for have been very effective. I do want to clarify to your earlier point, though, Mr. Chair, we are not capturing additional value or additional geography here. So most of the station area development will not be in a TIF district and therefore will not be captured. That will accrue to the tax base. We're simply capturing the increment in some existing districts which are actually quite geographically small and asking to be able to expend that increment throughout the corridor to create this platform for economic development at all of the other stations whose value we will capture in the tax base and will be available to us all.
I understand that.
Good.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that was a good point from Ms. Homans. I just wanted to make I'm reminded of a recent conversation we had, very similar. I just wanted to, call, members' attention to pages 4 and 5 on this handout. Those pictures, I think, really tell the story about what's possible and what's not possible. And that's adding the public side amenities to really add to the attractiveness of the public realm. And those kinds of improvements aren't necessarily attributable to a particular development, so it's not, we had this conversation on my bill. Yet these are extremely important if we're going to maximize the redevelopment opportunity and potential from the transit line. And that, in a larger sense, is a huge benefit to all of us, because if we create an attractive public realm, create an excellent community development approach, and are able to really attract the kind of business opportunities and housing opportunities along a fixed infrastructure investment like this to take advantage of a lot of existing infrastructure that we've already paid for, sewers and roads and, you name it. That's an expense into the billions of dollars, and there's a report that was distributed about this time last year that we forego in the metropolitan area and as a state to support. Otherwise, we got, a million folks coming here in the next 10 years or so. They're going to go somewhere. They're going to have to live somewhere. And isn't it better if we're taking advantage of the fixed investments we've already made in huge millions and millions and millions of dollars in roads and sewers and you name it in fully built environments versus spreading it out and spreading it out and spreading it out? And so that's kind of a bigger picture to think about as we're talking about maybe capturing some of, and your argument is a good one, which is the proper source, and are we going to capture all of this increased value or not? Similar questions you had on my bill, and we need to work through those. The idea of capturing some of this increment for these sorts of public realm improvements that maximize the redevelopment potential along the transit line, I think, in the end, saves us all a lot more and creates a lot more opportunity.
But I mean, to Senator Pogemiller's point last week, maybe he didn't take it quite this far, but if there is a master development plan along the corridor, why wouldn't we require those different developers to build the piece of infrastructure that we want built as just as part of the development? Build it into the cost of their project. If this is going to be such valuable real estate along this corridor, why can't they assume the costs of the infrastructure in their development plan?
Mr. Chair, members, when we do have redevelopment, when we do have development of parcels, we do require that they assume responsibility for planting trees or, putting the sidewalk back in the appropriate design, and we're creating those design standards for them. But we expect that that development is going to follow by several years, the construction of the light rail line. In the meantime, there are thousands of small businesses that want to thrive and grow in place. They will have withstood several years of construction. And so we want to create, again, that economic development platform for those businesses to grow. And as you're certainly aware, at the eastern end of the corridor, those are small businesses that aren't going to, you know, be big developers, but they're an important part of our economic development fabric. And we want to have people come to those restaurants and people come shop in those stores. We want this to be an attractive and vibrant commercial area.
So we're going to enhance their property values, right? And what percentage of them, because they're small, are going to get cobbled together in a redevelopment package and are all going to be gone, and left in their place is a much larger, whether it's residential, higher, you know, dense development. I mean, to what extent is building all of this infrastructure just going to enhance current property values that then at some point end up redeveloped anyway?
Mr. Chair, we are making every effort with other sources of funds to support those small businesses to grow in place to the extent that they're able. Now, some of them certainly may move, but one of our sort of parts of our community development effort is to create a marketing plan and to create tools for those businesses so that the eastern end of University Avenue continues to be a place for small international businesses. And for folks to know that if they're looking for that kind of a commercial environment, this is where they should come, to the eastern end of University Avenue. It'll now be easy to get to by transit. It'll be an attractive environment, and those businesses will be stronger. As a result, we'll employ more people, and we'll enhance the tax base of our community. So it's a broader community development plan. These proceeds would be a critical part of the first 5 years of developing that plan while we're under construction. These are streetscape improvements and parking mitigation improvements would be best done at the same time the line is being built. And so we're making every effort to make efficient use of all of the taxpayers' money, whatever source, to have all of that work done at once.
Chair Bach, I think there's also a component of assessing existing property owners for benefits that they receive for above standard. The City of St. Paul has a policy to assess 100% above standard improvements to property owners. I think the challenge you have here, or at least the city has here, is an improvement that is complicated, long, and affects property owners, both tenants and real estate owners, of varying interest in this effort. And some of them, frankly, are very concerned about the disruptive effect of this effort. So one role that I think the Housing and Redevelopment Authority, the City of St. Paul, can play here is the commons, if you will, the representative of doing an improvement to its most effective way and providing the resources to relax what are going to be a variety of personal interest, property interest, opinion of benefit. And so one way to do that is to take a tool that they use for urban renewal and redevelopment. And it's predictable. It's performed over the last few years. We know precisely what these properties throw off in revenue and apply that, because there's no objection from the entities that are affected by that, to the commons, to everybody. I do believe that the city intends to assess some of these improvements to the property owners, but there's going to be a deviation point, if you will, above a certain number. And the question for the public entity is, then should I simply replace the bent straw pole because I can't get consensus with it, or should I put in a new lantern-style lighting that benefits more than just that individual property owner? Obviously, it benefits the whole corridor. And I believe that what they're struggling with is, we need to know if we have the appropriate tool to solve for that problem. And if we don't, then we're going to be back negotiating with more than several hundred property owners individually. And so I think that's really the crux. We can pick whatever pipeline we want to solve the problem, but I think this is one that we know performs.
But Mr. Shurta, where I'm having trouble is the but-for test that we look for under TIF. I mean, I can't figure out how it meets the but-for test. But for this infrastructure, the development wouldn't happen.
Chair Bach, I think that's a policy issue that you're directly facing on this issue. I think the but-for test, and we do but-for tests for a variety of developments, is more acute when there's a direct private party benefiting. So, for example, there's a contaminated site, and the public entity buys the site, and turns around and sells it to the developer for less than fair market value. There go the part, the private entity is getting a direct private benefit. We need to do a but-for test for that. We need to prove up that the private entity needs that benefit in order to make an investment for a rate of return that's approximately 10 to 15%, some market rate of return. In this case, what they are doing is spending the money on public improvements. So they're doing it in the right-of-way. They're doing it to buy the station in downtown where they have to purchase the property behind St. Paul Athletic Club, and then split the property up, put the station on, and then they may have some residual private property for improvement. At that point, if the HRA chose to deliver that property for less than fair market value, then they would need to do a but-for test for business subsidy or any of the other conditions that you have on there to justify a write-down. Otherwise, they would sell the property at fair market value, and the proceeds would go back into the TIF, eligible for other public improvements. There is a business mitigation aspect to this project that is about the parking displacement that may provide places to park program surface parking to relieve those turn-of-the-century buildings that have no parking. They have on-street parking. So there may be a component of this money that is business mitigation that would involve what would typically be private expenditure, which is why we advise them to use a tool that allows you to make those types of expenditures and be very direct with you about the relief they're seeking. There could be private expenditure here, and we think we should apply that, flag you to that. If that policy decision is not within what you're comfortable with, then you would remove that use limit, but they still need the time to generate the money. And then I think the city would have to go back and say, well, these are ineligible costs. We can't do this type of business mitigation. We thought it best to lay it all out for you so that you could see what all the potential expenditures are that they would like to make. I will point out that they have $150-odd million of expenditure. This revenue only throws off $37 million. And so they're, practically speaking, the TIF is really going to only be available for primarily those public improvements in the downtown station, I believe. But I, the city would know more about the expenditures.
Mr. Schertler, a lot of niceties. Nice things to have. Not necessary for the redevelopment. That's what I'm struggling with. Senator Dibble, try to come. I have the same issue with your bill, and I think Senator Pogemiller shares that. And I think the way we left your bill was, can you Minneapolis people figure this out?
We'll get together with the St. Paul people.
I think that maybe a little broader group might be better.
A little juggernaut there. I guess it's in the eye of the beholder, the nice things. But are they necessary? I would fall down on more on the necessary side. The mitigation piece for the businesses that are going to remain in place, that's a legitimate issue. Because, there's going to be redevelopment, but we're also going to want to retain character of this corridor with the small entrepreneurs, the mom and pop, the immigrant entrepreneurs and the like. That's an important aspect of the character. It needs to be maintained to the extent possible. There's also tremendous redevelopment opportunity. But for some of these nice things, are those redevelopment, those redevelopments going to occur? And the answer may well be no.
Well, but I think we've heard that this whole idea of light rail is going to be a panacea. I mean, I think that's what we've heard, that all this development was going to happen.
Well, Mr. Chair, it needs to be coupled with policies and guidance. It doesn't happen magically by itself. You don't just throw it down the track and it just happens.
Sir Langseth, isn't that what you've been told, that if we get this light rail in, all this development's going to happen and be a good thing for the inner cities?
I guess that's what I've heard.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't think anyone has ever pretended that, you just throw down the track, you build your bare bones, and just close your eyes.
It happens with some
planning and some guidance and some resources directed to a specific place.
I have good friends that are developers. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman.
I mean, it just seems like we're shifting a lot of the cost that they normally would bear in the development of their project to the taxpayer, and in this case, actually to the property tax owner.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this is just kind of an aside to that. This is a big balancing thing, and when you're talking about the development that's supposed to come from light rail, I don't know. I thought I had understood that there was development occurring on the Hiawatha line. I don't know. I drive it quite a bit these days when I take someone in my office home. And I get on Hiawatha. I have lived in the suburbs all my life. I drive a car. Okay, I don't ride trains because they don't really have one, although North Star is coming. And then I can get to the Twins, and then I can get to the Capitol. So I'm pretty excited about that. But when I drive on Hiawatha, there are not very many cars. People are on that train. I can just whiz right right on through. I love it. So, I'm just telling you that there's benefit for people other than just the people in St. Paul. And I also drive University Avenue a lot because they don't do the freeways in when there's snow. And plus I have children who live kind of on the north end up by Como. It sorely needs redevelopment. I mean, there's some exciting, wonderful new businesses there, but it's not real attractive, and we all know that. And it needs, you need to get people like me to come here. I mean, I come here because I work here, and people in the district didn't want me there. They sent me here. But, you know, I think it's real. I'm just trying to balance all this, and I think there is benefit even for those of us who are not directly paying for it. So this is a matter where the people of St. Paul are the ones that will be paying. And, you know, I think it's up to the city to decide. But I do think, but for the TIF, I don't see this happening. And Senator Scoy and I were talking about the station, and I'll defer to him about that.
Senator Scoy?
Well, Mr. Chair, and I think I heard, I'm sorry, I forgot.
Mr. Shirtler.
Say that this would raise about $37 million, most of which was going to be spent on acquisition for the 4th and Cedar Station. Did I hear that correctly?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, we have three major uses for the money. About $27 million would be streetscape improvements from the city border to the lower town maintenance facility, lighting, trees, irrigation. The one block acquisition in downtown, the 4th and Cedar block, that would allow the train to make the diagonal cut through the block, which actually has reduced the cost of the transit project, is a small portion of that $37 million. We're not talking about the cost in too broadly, but it's a relatively small portion. And then the balance, also a relatively small portion, is to do the parking mitigation on University Avenue. So those are the three uses we anticipate for the use of the $37, $39 million that we would bond with these proceeds.
Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair, why is that 4th and Cedar area not part of the project?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, that's a good question. It's not part of the project because if the Transit Authority were to acquire that block, and since the train is going through essentially a private development block, then they would be restricted on only being able to make transit use of that block. The eventual development of that block, which we hope to happen above and around that transit line, can't be done by the Transit Authority, and they would be restricted in disposing of the balance of the land that they don't need for transit. So it's more efficient and effective if somebody other than the Transit Authority acquires that land, and then we have the hope of the economic development above and around the train tracks there. It's a sort of a convoluted reason.
Proposing to use the TIF district from Snelling and University to pay for that.
To pay for the acquisition, sir, yes.
Mr. Chair, members, you know, there are three governmental entities involved in this project. You've got the federal money that's coming in with their own restrictions on how much you could get based on what formula, and you better stay within sort of those confines. We have the county, who is really, and the rail authority, who are sort of the project drivers of the rail project. And then there's the city. It's within our boundaries. And I think that the city is doing the absolutely right thing. They are the champion for the people and the businesses and the communities that are going to be affected by this line. And this is, I think, the city's way of contributing to that, but also being responsive to the neighborhoods and the people who are, whose lives on a daily basis are going to be affected by this. And, you know, the city didn't just sort of took on these projects. I mean, I think that they felt the responsibility to do that. But there's been a public process with the neighbors and the neighborhoods and citizens in St. Paul that led to the conclusion that the city really had to take on the responsibility to engage and to come up with a proposal and how to make this work for the individuals who live in the city. And I think that this is the best effort that the city's been able to thus far put forth to be responsive to that and be creative and be innovative and be a partner in how to make this project a reality.
So, Senator Mwah, do we have letters of support or resolutions of support from the county and from the school district?
Mr. Chair, the county is still considering it. They're coming to a vote on Tuesday. Is Nick here? I should just speak for themselves. It's been a very productive conversation.
Is anybody from the school district here? Or why don't you update the school district, and then we'll have...
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the school district will be supporting the... has just recently considered it and will be forwarding a letter to the author supporting the proposal.
We should have your name for the record.
Oh,
in case something changes.
I should know that by now, shouldn't I? Mary Gilbert, St. Paul Public Schools.
Mr. Chair, members, Nick Riley representing Ramsey County. Our board will be taking this up next Tuesday. They had a workshop this past Tuesday on it. And, you know, I think one of the but-for things you can look at is this whole central corridor. You know, the neighborhood groups and everything are very concerned that they're not getting some of the amenities that they need along the way, and this certainly helps them get there. I'm not sure how our board's going to vote, but I'm sure they're going to be very supportive of this project. They have been all along. We've been the leader on Central Corridor, as you know. So my guess is that they would vote positively on this, but I can't say that for certain.
Can you let us know when they act?
I will.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sundrum.
Mr. Chair, and I defer my question if it's already been asked, but referencing lines 1-9 and 1-10, 1-10 in particular, where it talks about this quarter-mile distance, has that been talked about, by the way? Okay. My question then is, you know, and I'm generally empathetic towards TIF, but that seems like a fairly large district to go, if you will, a quarter mile off University Avenue on either side. I can envision that the rail may have some virtues in terms of redevelopment along Central Avenue or University Avenue. I'm sorry, but to tie up all that additional geography in a TIF district, I don't know. I just raised the question: why are you doing that? That's going to defer any new tax growth in all of that space. And then it says at least 80%. I don't know where the other 20% is, but that's going to tie up all that additional tax revenue for 20 years. And Wouldn't you want that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sundrum, we aren't capturing the value. We're only allowed to expend the proceeds in that area. We're capturing the value in the four existing TIF districts, which are generally right in front of KSTP on the western end. At Snelling and University, there are two of them. And then there's a scattered site district. So we're capturing the value, but we're asking to be able to expend the increment anywhere along the corridor so that we have kind of an even benefit, whether you're in a TIF district or not in a TIF district. But we certainly don't want to capture additional geography here.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, and to the witness, that quarter mile reference really doesn't reference the geography noted in lines 116 and 1 to 121. Is that right?
That's right, Mr. Chair, okay. Senator.
Thank you.
The Ms. Holmans, the use of the existing increment through 2014, 2016, is any of that money available, or is that already all committed?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to defer to Mr. Schertler.
$7 million or whatever that number was.
Mr. Chair, that there is, I think, existing outstanding debt that has to be satisfied on those districts, and I'm a little at a loss because I don't have the immediate document. Todd Hurley.
Chair Bach, Todd Hurley, City of St. Paul. I'm the actual City Treasurer and City Budget Director. There is debt service outstanding in all four TIF districts, and there is no excess tax increment in these districts as we sit here today. Any balances that are in any of those funds are actually budgeted to be used for what they were originally intended to be used for when the creation of the TIF districts happened.
Thank you. Any other questions? What number have we got? Chairlady's over Senate File 1122 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Lantz, welcome. We've tried this a couple times and haven't been successful, but maybe today we can get this done for you.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, shall we take up Senate File 1286 first?
Whichever one you'd like first, Senator Lantz.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Chairman, members, Senate File 1286 is a TIF district extension in the city of Hopkins, Minnesota. I represent three suburban communities on the border of Minneapolis and immediately adjacent, in the case of Hopkins, to St. Louis Park. After spending 9 years on the St. Louis Park City Council, I became very familiar with the benefit to redevelopment for fully developed suburban communities that TIF districts present. We don't have greenfields that are cheap to redevelop. We don't have very many tools, frankly, to renew our communities. So the communities in my area have, especially St. Louis Park and Hopkins, have done a lot of careful and judicious redevelopment utilizing TIF districts. They've become even more important given the changes in the last 5 or 6 years in the laws and in the budget situations that have basically taken away most or all of local government aid that will be phasing out market value credit and that have capped levies for our cities. So there really is no alternative anymore for our local communities other than TIF districts for doing significant redevelopment. City of Hopkins used to get to $1.8 million in TIF. They're down to $50,000 now. They get $250,000 in market value, and that's going to be phased out. And they're affected by the levy caps. So what you have before you is a proposed TIF district extension that is being required are being requested, and they would argue required because of the change in the economy and in the market in particular for the types of redevelopment that are appropriate to that location. I do want to point out that this includes not only an extension of the time of the district, but also it's a 5-year rule exemption and research of the committee staff has indicated that in 2008, at least 24 districts in 15 cities got special law extensions or exemptions of the 5-year rule. Through 2007, there were 26 special laws that extended district duration. What we're seeking here is not in any way unique or of the first impression for this committee, but we think the particular proposal in front of you today, this and the others that will follow under my authorship, would meet the criteria, and we ask for your support for that. On the Hopkins TIF District Extension, I have with me today Rick Getchaw, the city manager, Kirsten Alvarum, the director of economic development and planning, and Cheryl Iwakim, city council member from the city of Hopkins. I would ask you to hear their testimony.
Thank you. Who would like to go first?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having us here today. We
need your name and who you represent for the record.
Kirsten Alvarum, director of planning and development for the city
thank
of
you.
Hopkins. The bill that you have before you is really impacting two separate TIF districts in Hopkins. Both were created to facilitate housing projects. Both housing projects began as condominium projects, and due to that market collapsing, have been repositioned and are now being looked at for apartment development on Main Street in Hopkins. The City Council still feels these projects are extremely important to Hopkins and our downtown. They continue to meet the goals that we established when we first began working on these projects, and that is to bring additional people living on Main Street, supporting our businesses, and hopefully taking advantage of a very walkable, convenient environment. The change in the market and the fact that we've worked these projects for several years as condominium projects has really resulted in a loss of increment that we can pledge to the projects, and as a result of that, we're asking for the extension on the 5 years added to the district, as well as the two extensions on the one project to allow us to incur the cost. With that, I would be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Anybody else want to comment?
Mr. Chair, members, Rick Getchaw, City Manager, City of Hopkins. I'd just like to echo the statements that this is simply due to the economy and the condition that we're in. These are very promising redevelopment projects. It's just the timeline due to the economic conditions we're in extends the need for the districts and the projects.
Cheryl Joachim, Hopkins City Council. We've had many, many, many work sessions over the last 4 years with these developments, and the City Council is still behind redeveloping this really important part of Main Street, and just due to the economy, we need to have this tool in our toolbox. Thank you.
Senator Lotz, we've seen several requests this year already like this as a result of kind of postponed development because of the economic circumstances. So,
Mr. Chairman.
We're gonna
Mr. Chairman, may I ask, is the convent still there, St. Joseph's?
Actually, I go to that parish, and it is, and we're in the process of trying to raise money to fix a very old, crumbly building, but it is still there.
Mr. Chairman, speaking of old and crumbly, I took my first piano lessons there, and I'm not Catholic, and it was a real interesting experience to be I'm taught piano when you're at 5 years old by a nun, and I have great memories of that. I just thought I'd see if it was still there.
Senator Scheid, that was quite a while ago.
It is, Mr. old and crumbly, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I think the piano might still be there, too. Senator Scheid, Harold's originally from St. Louis Park, so claim her as one of our own, too.
Anything else on Senate File 1286? Not Chair Lee's over Senate File 1286 for inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On Senate File 310, this is a St. Louis Park TIF district. And I guess the foundation that I laid in my opening remarks apply equally here. St. Louis Park used to receive about $4 million in LGA, and they get nothing now. They are also facing the phase-out of the market value credit, and they are directly affected by the levy caps. They have done a lot of use of TIF, I know in St. Louis Park in particular, there's been a lot of heavy industrial use over the years. So they've had some real special redevelopment challenges, and TIF has been the most effective tool that we were able to use to effect those redevelopments. And you can look at the success stories on Excelsior and Grand, which has been held up by professionals in the field as a great way to have accomplished redevelopment. But the city needs some additional help with regard to TIF district extensions, and I'll ask the city representatives here to explain why. We have Kevin Locke, the Community Development Director, Bruce DeYoung, the Finance Director, and available to answer questions or to comment would be Vic Moore, our government liaison for the City of St. Louis Park.
Thank you. My name is Kevin Locke. I'm the Community Development Director for the City of St. Louis Park, and just wanted to thank you for the opportunity to be here and to Senator Latz for sponsoring this bill. We did have a little handout that summarizes some of what I was going to comment on. I'll keep my comments brief. Kind of the key for us is, as an aging first-ring suburb, redevelopment is a very important aspect of what we do. It's vital to the health of the community, and we've had a lot of success to date, and I think we have a strong community as a result. The Elmwood neighborhood in St. Louis Park is one of the older neighborhoods, an aging area. It was mostly industrial, but kind of a mix of commercial and industrial, really needed help. City, working with the county, developed a long-range plan back in 2003, and since then, we have had our initial projects start in that area, and it started to transform.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. The agenda had 311, the Elmwood District, next in the order, and I guess I called it 310 because I had my files in the order numerically, which is the Excelsior Boulevard District. So as long as I'm on 310, Kevin, why don't you concentrate on the Excelsior Boulevard part.
All right, let me talk about Excelsior Boulevard. Many of the comments that are described in the handout relate to the Excelsior Boulevard extension as well. What, because in both cases, we're really looking, frankly, at the extension of two different TIF districts. The Elmwood area, redevelopment area, has a TIF district of its own. The Excelsior Boulevard is a separate TIF district that could be a source of funds to help us with completing the work we've started in Elmwood. The slowdown, frankly, as has been mentioned else with previous bills, in terms of the economic conditions, has slowed down the amount of increment, reduced the amount of resources that we have available for undertaking the improvements that we need in the Elmwood area. Extension of the Excelsior Boulevard District, and I think our proposal is to extend it for 4 years. It's a very large district, and so it generates a lot of resources and would take only a short period of time to generate the kind of dollars that we feel would be necessary to complete the Elmwood improvements. As Senator Latz indicated, we don't have other tools. I think one of the things that I'm always struck by, tax increment financing is not a great tool. It's not a perfect tool, I should say, but it's the only tool really we have as cities to come up with significant resources to do the kinds of things we need to do. And in this case, most of what we're talking about doing is public improvements at this point that benefit not only the immediate area where these projects are going forward, but the community as a whole.
So, Mr. Locke, the Elmwood District, what was the first year you started receiving increment off that?
In the Elmwood District, we've just begun getting revenues here in 2007.
Yeah. Senator Bach, Mr. Chairman, Bruce DeYoung, Finance Director for the City of St. Louis Park. The first year of increment was 2007.
And then are we sure it's not going to, that you need an exemption from the five-year rule? We already know that?
So, yes. Some of the, as you might guess, some of the improvements projects that we've been undertaking, especially with less resources available, have taken longer to get put together and approved than we had anticipated when we first created those districts. Part of the Part of the issue in Elmwood, part of the opportunity that Elmwood has presented is that it is on the southwest transit corridor. And some of the improvements that are planned and the developments that have even happened there have been in anticipation that we were going to eventually get transit in that corridor, and we're still confident that that will happen.
They're talking about taking the increment from this.
Frankly, kind of like Highway 100 in St. Louis Park, the deadline for when that project is going to start keeps moving back. And at this point, that makes a real challenge when we're dealing with the five-year rule to get things put together.
I think that is what he's explaining. Let them spend it there.
Mr. Chairman, just for clarification, the district was initially approved August 2nd of 2004, so we're bumping up against the five-year rule this year, and that would preclude us from any additional projects in this area if we go past that.
And the Elmwood District is how many years, and you're looking for an extension?
It was originally set up as a 15-year district, and we were looking to extend it by 10, so it'd be 25 total.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to know where the Elmwood District was. I know the Excelsior Boulevard, and I assume Oak Park Village is near that, but...
Yes, it's roughly the southwest corner of Highway 7 and Highway 100, okay. If you can kind of picture that area.
That is old. That's old.
Is there, Mr. Locke, is there some linkage between Centerfile 310 and the Excelsior project with Centerfile 311 and the Elmwood project? Or are they, we seem to kind of be on both bills at the same time. I mean, if we don't do 310, Senator Latz, and I just want you to be aware, we haven't extended any pre-79 TIFs. We've had a number of requests, but we have not done that. We didn't do it last year for Minneapolis and St. Paul. We're both here. I can just tell you personally, and I represent part of Duluth, they had two pre-79s they wanted extended. I asked them to not even take it up at the city council level because we haven't. At some point, projects, when they work, need to come on the tax rolls. So, and the pre-79 TIFs, it's time. So I'm just wondering if there's some linkage between the two bills.
Well, they are, the two districts are in the same development area. And the Excelsior Boulevard district is essentially next door, you might say, to the Elmwood district and area, and the funds that we're talking about would essentially be used in the Elmwood district.
So is there any reason for us to do Centerfile 311 that extends the 25 years, extends the five-year rule, if we don't do the pre-79 extension? Or does that not do you any good?
Any extension is helpful. Be most helpful if we had the ability to do both, obviously. But the extension of the Elmwood district itself would be
still important,
right?
Senator Lass, which one did we move? 310. That's the pre-79. Extension. Anything further on that?
Well,
yes, Mr. Chairman. The district, the Elmwood district, has about $20 million worth of public improvements yet to be constructed. And without, even with the extension to the Elmwood district, there aren't sufficient funds projected to be there over the course of that time to completely fund those. So the project is in some significant doubt that we may not be able to construct those improvements without the extension of both the Elmwood district and the pre-79 Excelsior Boulevard district.
But at what point, when property has been TIF'd for over 30 years, I mean, at what point do we just admit, well, maybe this project just can't develop how we would have liked it to, and we just kind of move on and go work on something else. What year was it the TIF originally created?
1977. So that TIF district has been extremely successful. What we're saying is that the Elmwood district is not being successful right now due to economic conditions, and we're looking for some support for the construction of the public improvements in there to allow that district to be self-sufficient, and we're looking for a very limited extension of the Excelsior Boulevard to be able to do that.
Chair Lays over Senate File 310 for possible inclusion. Senator Lott, Senate File 311, the Elmwood. Do we have anything further on that?
Mr. Chairman, no, I certainly want to acknowledge the concerns that you've expressed, and we just ask you to lay both of them over for possible inclusion.
We'll try to get something done on the Elmwood one for you. I mean, I think the committee understands the challenges with the economy and the five-year rule. We'll try to figure something out there. Any questions on Senate File 311, members? Not. Chair Lays over Senate File 311 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Members, we are going to come back next Tuesday, and Commissioner Innes is going to be here. We're going to have an overview of the governor's supplemental budget proposal. Can Senator Skoy property taxes Wednesday? You got some bills?
Yep, Wednesday. I think we've got 12 or 15 bills.
Oh. So. Okay. This committee's adjourned.